Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What would you have said in 1994 to yourself if you were like, you know what? 2021, the middle of January.
You're going to be talking into your laptop.
Yeah. You'd be talking into a portable computer.
And muting my mic every like 5 minutes because some kid is screaming in the hallway.
Making a radio show that doesn't go on the radio.
Right.
You'd be so confused if you had to explain to someone that, like, how would you even explain to someone in 1994 what a podcast is?
Oh, dude, or why on earth you would ever want to listen to it?
Like, what would you even say? I don't know. Be strange.
Like, you know, like really boring radio shows where it's just people talking about stuff. Like,
what was the radio like in the 50s, Brad?
Oh, it was fucking awesome, man. Big Bopper, Elvis.
I remember the day the music died. It was terrible. I think that's one of the reasons I'm grew up being afraid of airplanes was because of my early love of the movie La Bamba.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it was like one of the first movies I really liked, and you fall in love with this character. Was Lou Diamond Phillips?
Yeah.
And, you know, all of a sudden, like, they just get in this plane and then they're gone. I, it's like one of those things. You don't realize that something is giving you this, like, massive, lifelong existential crisis, you know? It seems like something, like, simple. But when you have that in the back of your head, then at some point you spend, like, half of your life flying. You know, that took some reconciling for me.
Good job.
Movies mess me up like that. I don't know. They seem so real. That's why I can't, you know, like we even talked about in this interview where we won't give it up because we play a wonderful game in this forthcoming interview called Who's the Better Brother? Testing Tim and Dave Haas on who knows each other better and who's the better brother.
I gotta hand it to you, Benny. It was brilliant. It's a brilliant idea.
Fun game? Really, you had fun?
Yes. I loved it.
I had fun too. That was good. But we noted in there, you know, Dave's favorite film of all time. It's one of those ones that, like, it's great, but do you want to watch it like every day? And it goes back to that thing we've talked about a lot of times on here, you know, like just because something is this deep, rich tapestry for movies or music. Doesn't mean it's the thing you want to listen to or watch all the time. And does that not make it the best? Right.
Right.
So like if Citizen Kane is this incredible movie, but I can only stomach it like once a year, but I can watch fucking Step Brothers 3 times a week, no problem. You know, what's the better movie? Or, you know, if I'm listening to some lately in my house, there's been some really obscure like Brian Eno records and stuff. Very cool stuff. But if you put that in front of, like, you know, Fleetwood Mac Rumors, another thing we talked about on here, like, I want to probably have some fun.
Right. Well, it's,
you know, like,
it can be argued that there's the, you know, there's the emotional commitment. You know, it's two different sort of uses of music. It's, you know, like,
that's true.
It's like saying, you know, what's better, pot or LSD?
Right.
Like, like, well, yeah, LSD is definitely a more intense experience.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So I think we answered our own question, which is, there's probably no answer, is there?
Just a shitload of opinions.
Yeah, just a lot of opinions. And that's what podcasting is for, right?
That's all it is for.
Well, listen, we have a couple things we have to talk about this time, okay?
Yeah.
I know we're usually just farting around in our intros here, but there's a couple things. So Dave and Tim are performing Dave's first solo record, Resolutions. It just turned 10 years old, which is crazy. Dave's been solo this long now.
And
this Saturday, they are performing the record in its entirety in honor. This would be Saturday the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. So Everybody go and check out the Resolutions live stream. We'll give all of Dave and Tim's links to go do so at the end of the episode. And also, I've been talking to some people the last couple days who are like, oh, you guys have a Patreon and you wait until the end of a 2-hour long episode to tell anybody about it. That's not what you're supposed to do. So in honor
Here's
of that, we do have a Patreon. We've been posting more on it, some extra content, things that we cut off at the end of episodes, some old content. We just started the Patreon weekly or bi-weekly chat where we're going to jump in a Discord room and hang out and chat.
Which I got to say, thanks to the people that showed up, because I honestly had more fun with that chat than I really thought I was going to have.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I was laughing out loud at a few moments.
You lolled?
I totally lolled,
times.
Man.
That's big. That's big. Yeah, there's some funny people on there. Yeah, there's a couple. Yeah, that was fun. So we do have that. Brad, what's the link to our Patreon?
If you go to patreon.com/goingofftrack, you'll find us.
Cool.
You can pick a tier to join.
Look at that, Brad. We're doing good. Next thing is us on TikTok. But I think Dave will very much empathize with this intro, because he's just like me.
Yeah.
Covered in punk rock guilt, punk rock scruples. We're just, you know, we wish someone just gave us an adequate amount of money for our children so we didn't have to be sluts, you know? But that's the way of the world. That's the way it breaks. If we wanted more stability, we should have gotten a corporate job and been waiting for our gold watch, right?
Yeah, you would have been great at that, Benny.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I will just laugh at that one. Well, we had some technical difficulties. I'm not sure how long this episode's going to be, but it was so much fun, and I think we should start listening to it. It's going off track! Don't start, Dave.
Are we good?
don't start there. Oh, no. Hey, guys.
Yo.
Where's Tim?
He's here. We're golden.
Tim, how do you sound?
I think I sound okay.
Oh, so much better.
Yeah.
The felonious tones of your voice.
Oh, stop.
Yeah.
So, Dave, since you didn't have to do video, let's just get it out there. What are you wearing?
Oh, I have Adidas slides on with no socks.
Uh-huh.
I have Adidas pants on.
Uh-huh. Going for a sponsorship, I hear.
Yeah, yeah. I look like, from the waist down, I look like Polly Walnuts. And then
I don't have Dave.
Cruddy North Coat. I mean, it's not cruddy because it's North Coat, but it's
sure.
It's cruddy because my coffee is spilled on it and my children have smeared various foods
right.
onto my North Coat hooded sweat.
Okay. So looking good.
So how about you? Comb. What are you in?
You know, I make it a point to at least like wake up, clean up, and put on some jeans. Now, Tim.
Yeah.
I feel like you're the kind of guy who wakes up in the morning and actually puts himself together. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I try to. Yeah, I have been lately. I've started off the year on a really good foot. So, yes.
Okay. Is this New Year's resolution stuff?
It's not part of the New Year's resolution, but it's I guess it's no, I don't. I didn't make a list of resolutions, but it just happens to be one of the good things that has come along with the new year.
That's cool. So, what do you what kind of practices are you using that got yourself off on a good foot for this year?
Well, my wife and I, Maddie, are juicing every morning.
Okay,
This is big for health.
Yeah,
we do our Whole Foods pickup weekly. Another big, landmark piece. Cause our house was a food desert that David.
Oh my God. I've entered this desert.
And a barren desert.
Oh my God. And I would implore them, guys, what if you were to go food shopping? What if I were to go food shopping? It's a beautiful home you bought here. You know, it's got plenty of room, whatever, beautiful decorations and no food. What are we doing here? And so I've leaned in on Tim over the years to go shopping. And,
okay.
And now he's being a very good boy.
Yeah, yeah. I see it's settled in if you're doing a daily juicing.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is, yeah, it's, we're on the up and up for sure.
Okay. So daily juicing, anything you're telling yourself or any kind of daily thing you're doing to feel good?
Yeah, actually. So I swiped this idea off of Bruce Warren, who works for XPN.
Okay.
And he's done now, I guess, for 2 years straight, a record a day, listening to one record each day.
Oh, all right.
And so this has been a pretty big deal for me too. Cause it's been nice socially cause I'm asking for suggestions. So if you guys would like to submit any, please,
sure.
Please do. But then, you know, it's just good to get something new going every day or something that I've already heard. But
so, okay. So it doesn't have to be something new.
No, not necessarily.
It can be a revisit.
Yep.
And is there any kind of rules on how you're supposed to listen? Like, do you have to like sit down with headphones and like focus, or you're allowed to do it in any capacity?
No, I'm allowing myself any capacity, but in, you know, upcoming years, who knows, I might get a little bit more focused with it.
I do. I have this sort of nostalgic idea about just, I think maybe because I saw my father do it when I was a kid, but just like someone sitting in the mostly dark with those big, like old school headphones with the curly cord, kind of like, you know, listening to something very focused, tapping along with like no one else around. It's sort of like a cool nostalgic thing that I imagine might be going away. I picture everyone's just in silent discos now or something.
Yeah.
I have that same sort of lofty view. I, you know what it is? That's what when you're mastering a record, that's what I think. That every person who's going to purchase your album is going to do. They're going to pour themselves a little scotch and sit in a beautiful chair and get out their father's curly Q headphones and then put the needle on the wax. And when in total darkness. Yeah, when in reality, they just skip on Spotify and find whatever song everyone else has listened to.
I know. It's so disheartening to realize, right, that people don't care nearly as much as you do.
Yeah, exactly.
But some people do. Some people do.
Some people do. And those are the people that allow us to sit here in sweatpants and talk about whatever it is we want to talk about instead of digging holes or whatever. Hey, Tim, by the way, I will just do what you'll probably find here. It will be a lot of praise for my brother, Tim.
Of course.
But he's been writing so many good songs. We've been doing Pencils Down Friday. And so
what's that mean?
I believe we've only passed two Fridays in this year, but we're demanding from one another that Friday you have to turn in a song. And it can be, it can't be unfinished. It can be bad, but it has to be something that you can sing. In other words, it can't be like, yo, I got this idea. And the verse just goes, blah, 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 you know, and like, you can't scat through it. You have to
it's
be,
gotta
able to
be
sing
a
something.
Formed idea.
Yeah. Exactly. It can be poorly formed.
Sure.
And that's what some of mine have been, but Tim has come a game. That juicing is bringing so many good songs.
Wow. So what's the process of this like for each of you? Like, how are you? I mean, this was something I wanted to get into anyway, you know, how you're going about creating during this time. So Dave, what's your ritual been like as far as finding the time, you know, with a couple 2-year-old boys running around and your situation. I'm sure it's changed for you at home when you got to find these windows and how you need to spark your own creativity. So how's that all changed for you?
Well, I've been just trying to look at it more like a job wherein you have to show up for hours. So Natasha, gotcha. My wife, is a therapist for anybody out there who wants to know that. But basically, she works later.
Who
in
needs
the day.
One?
Yes. She's no, actually, she's full. I mean, everybody's looking for therapy.
Yeah.
So, she goes into work usually around 1 to 5. And so we just kind of worked it out that I would start doing work about 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then the boys go down for nap. And so we sort of overlap the nap or whatever. This is not that interesting. But the point is, I just try to get out here and work. But for whatever reason, the turn of the new year, Tim and I have been much more disciplined. I think this like sort of demand of you got to turn something in on Friday is really good for me. Just to go, like, even if I'm mostly combing older ideas that I set aside throughout the year, I go, oh, that's a pretty good one. Let's get to it. And then we do Tim and I do sessions throughout the week, like Zoom sessions. So we don't have a clever term yet for what we do on Monday or Wednesday, but it's sort of like the recap of Pencils Down Friday.
Okay. Now, what has it had to change for you as far as like where you're finding your impulse to create from? I mean, many years ago when you were doing this and didn't have the responsibilities you have now, I can imagine, you know, you were waiting for rushes of creativity or waiting for great ideas to be around. And now, obviously, it's more if you have them or not, you're sitting down to work. How has that changed for you? And like, and where do you have to fish the ideas from now?
Yeah, I would say the fishing is pretty similar. It's usually just little bolts throughout the day or through, like, as long as you keep your antennae up, stuff comes across. So, I don't know why I said antennae. That would mean I have two, but anyway, the idea is still grab a quick idea, at least whether that's a lyric idea or a melody or whatever, and get that into the phone or into your notes.
Right.
And then the sort of crafting of that into a song is more like disciplined, and you have a limited amount of time. But the biggest shift for me is identity. And I think you and I have talked about this a little bit, either on the phone or in a text, but
yeah,
it's weird. I think that the combined phenomenon of having twins and being a dad for now 2 years and this big COVID retreat of work, you know, where we're not out touring at all,
yeah,
I've sort of rejiggered my identity as more of Smith and Harrison's dad than... Mm. This guy with all these ideas who sings and, you know, I just don't even think of myself as much like that. I think
feelings
of
self-importance.
Yeah. Like my, it's great because it's such a ego, destroyer to be a parent. And, and so I sort of have looked at the creative process a lot more in awe and a lot more like it's something I can't quite control. I can guide and I'm more open to the whole thing because, again, I'm not thinking about it like solo artist guy or like here's what I've got to say guy or like none of that is as appealing to me because I just think, well, what does Smith and Harrison have to say or what are they up to? Like it's just whole set of priorities is different. And so I think it'll lead to different paths creatively. And it's something that's exciting to me instead of scary.
Has there been any feeling like it's less about the identity you're trying to personally create or harvest and more about what you're going to leave behind for your children?
Like, totally.
Is that in your head when you're doing it?
Yeah. And almost in that sense, how you conduct yourself and the way you deliver the message, whatever that is just as important. So in this day and age where people are like, oh, you know, you have to engage with the audience and you have to tweet. And I do that. But I'm a little bit more reverent of all that because there's going to be a record of it. And, right, and so, right, you know, all my kids are going to, you know, I've been deep diving because I'm doing Resolutions, my first solo record, turns 10 this month. So I've been deep diving into it and on social media doing like a song by song thing. So naturally I'm going down memory lane. But one thing I read was a link to when I first put out this song Prague, and mm-hmm. and the song in the is called Revive Me as well, like in parentheses, and all these yucky cretins from Punk News had made all these comments about Revive Me is what he's gonna have to say if he ODs. Like there was all these sort of drug references. It was really dark. And I thought, boy, this is a searchable thing that my kids in theory, like if I found it, my kids will probably be able to find it. And so it's those kinds of things where I'm like, you know, I gotta think through how this is gonna be like, there's a weird thing because you want to be pure in your creativity and say whatever the best line is, but you also have to be careful now. You know, knowing that you're going to get questions, you know, or I guess not careful. You have to be prepared to answer questions that are going to come up from these two little
Sure. Like if you actually had the access to put on wax the things you've said at bars to people in the last 20 years or something, you know, like it's terrifying.
Oh my God. Yeah. Just in just you and I in the bus alone, just those conversations. Yeah.
Canceled as fuck, man. We're nowhere near this industry anymore.
right. And our children just looking on in horror.
I've realized that with the podcast because I'm like, you know, half of what I do is just, you know, I can't present myself as anything but exactly what I am. I'm too, you know, emotionally weak to do anything but that. So, but I realized that, like, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I roll my mouth all the time. My nieces listen to this. I'm like, okay, everyone thought I smoked pot. Now they know, you know, like things like that are wax. Do you think that if you had kids when you started like the dirty fucker thing, that you may have like taken like a different tone, or is that still exactly like how you wanted to throw that out there?
Well, you know, that's a good question because what I'm experiencing going through song by song is that awkward looking back thing that happens when you go back to an old record. It's not unlike a yearbook. You know, you open it up and go, oh my God, really? I had to wear my hair like that? Is that? And I sort of think that, especially as I went solo, because I was attempting to do a different kind of music than I was comfortable with. And mm-hmm. that intersection can be interesting, but it can also be frustrating because, like, I'm like, oh my God, why was I playing it so fast? And why did I hammer on the guitar? And, I've learned a couple things since then that improve the delivery of songs, I think. But so I think you run into that with anything. I don't know if I would have. I think I would have. I mean, Dirty Fucker almost didn't make it just because it's ridiculous in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, kids or not. Right. I was like, am I really going to put a song out called Dirty Fucker? And And everyone around me, whether that was, you know, Tim helped write that record, and the two producers we were working with, they loved it. And the manager I was working with at the time loved it. And I just thought, okay, this is ridiculous, but let's do it. And then it happened to be that the record came out, like we made that record, and then you know who got elected. So suddenly we had this accidental anthem. I mean, that song was not about him. It was about being in the park and stepping in dog shit.
Yeah.
And my friend going, man, it's always some dirty fucker that doesn't clean up after their dog.
Oh, okay. I thought it was specifically about that. Okay.
No. Yeah. I just sort of saw a way through on it and went, oh wow, the ultimate dirty fucker just got elected.
Right.
And then as we started to tour, I think I just said, oh, this song's for the president of the United States. And then the shirt came about and blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
But no, it wasn't about him. It was, we haven't even written a song about him. Right, Tim? There hasn't been one song. There's a song we made called Little Chainsaw. About it's sort of based on Brett Kavanaugh, but it, because it was so similar to what someone would say about Donald Trump, we left it off of Kick, the last record, because I was like, I just don't want to even field any questions about that. I don't want to give that guy any more oxygen, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's crazy. Tim, I wanted to ask you about Pencils Down Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And what your approach, like starting in the week, is, and where, you know, your creativity is coming from these days.
Right. Well, honestly, a lot of the creativity thus far, there's a lot of voice notes and a lot of notes in my phone that, to my chagrin, I have not finished.
Right.
Like they're just unfinished there. And so I kind of have taken, I wanted to be more like deadline oriented, just to like, you know, you have to get something done. So I've really been loving the Pencils Down Friday thing. And a lot of it so far has just been combing through those voice notes and combing through old ideas and seeing like, okay, which ones are good, which ones are have potential, which ones are unfinished, which ones are close. And then getting just a bunch of things on various burners on the stove in levels of completion.
And what medium are you doing voice notes on? Are you on piano, guitar, just lyrics, like melodies? Like where do you start?
It can be all of the above. Sometimes it'll start with a riff. Like a lot of times if I'm doing something in drop D tuning, for instance, like I feel like often when I'm doing that, I'll start with a riff and then it'll lead to a melodic idea. But yeah, it kind of varies. I try to switch it up because I think that the things that you come up with on the piano are often different than the things that you come up with on guitar. So I try to switch it up and just keep moving and keep getting different stuff and finding different ways to, you know, get these ideas, honestly.
Well, I mean, there was something I was curious about in when you're creating, because like, you know, obviously since you are the younger brother, you've been, you know, very aware of Dave's music throughout the years and the kinds of movements he's made in music. When you're coming up with ideas and going for Pencils Down Friday, is it almost like, you know, you kind of know Dave's taste so well that he would, you know, exactly what he would want to hear? And in that respect, do you know when to push things further to give him what he doesn't want to hear?
Yes, yes and no. So I definitely think like there are things that I know he'll gravitate towards, but
right. Also
I know when I have something that he wouldn't come up with, that's like a little bit more me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when I bring those things out, he gets real pumped.
Okay.
Which is really cool.
Which really leads us to what I'm hoping with all this Pencils Down Friday work.
Which is what?
Is that Tim will have a Tim record. And it's funny, we just had a conversation. We've had many conversations about this, but yesterday we discussed this because we have so many songs, even just combing through the ideas. We have various lists going. And I think some of the best songs are Tim's that are so specific to the way he writes with the flavors that would be foreign to me, that perhaps it's time for him to make his own record, you know, call it whatever you want. Of course, I think it should be just Tim Hawes, but he might come up with an elaborate, confusing thing that all the kids do these days. Like they call themselves City and Color when it's clearly a guy called something else. You know what I mean? His name's Dallas Green. I've met the man, but he calls himself City. And this happens over and over. North Coat. This is not the man's given name.
No.
It's some other thing. So yeah. Perhaps Tim will choose that way and fine. But I've been a big I'm kidding, of course, but I'm a big advocate for Tim's songs and feel like the great thing, hopefully, about this horrible plague extending is that we'll actually dig in and go back to some of the ideas that just got left on the side of the road. And it'll create, we'll be able to create a lot more music.
Yeah, I got you. So what is the end goal for Pencils Down Friday? Are we looking for a new record fairly soon, or like what's the goal in mind for 21?
the goal in mind that we're sticking, well, the schedule that we're on is to record a record in the spring, late spring, release it in the fall, and then tour hopefully in earnest on it in 2022. All mm-hmm. that is said with a very deep understanding of where we're at. But the good thing about that plan is it at least keeps us working and it keeps us honest. If it gets moved, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. But as things have progressed quickly with the writing, I'm hoping it leads to whatever we call the next Dave Haas record and then a Tim record. And because one of the things that we've decided, which I guess we're now saying in the public accidentally, but is that we'll do the label side of it. And rather than being label, we'll use label services, which gotcha. Is not that interesting. Yeah. And if you out there want to read about it, I'm sure you could Google it. But generally what it just means is we're in complete control and therefore can kind of do whatever we want.
Yeah.
And therefore probably release more music.
Are you going to be like starting your own label? Are you going to be trying to fund all of it yourself? Like how's that going to go?
Yeah, we sort of already did. We released the double EP. So two EPs,
right.
One covering the Patty Griffin and one covering Patty from right, Dillinger right. 4.
Sure.
And that we just self-released with the help of like a Sony label services thing. Mm-hmm. And let's just put it this way. When you put out your own record, you see why the record business exists. But you go like, oh, that's where all the money went. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to the label that I've put records out on. It's sure. just the general business. And you know this all too well. I mean, it's basically a bad loan that we take as right. musicians.
Right. So. Yeah. It's funny how you need like 10, 20 years in the business to realize you've just been getting hoodwinked by your rigged game for like the entire time, you know? Like,
yeah, it really is true. And you know what the darkest part of it has been? Well, the darkest bump in the road was once I started to see it and we sold some records on this and, you know, it's a covers EP or covers album or whatever. And so
yeah, right.
you're inevitably going to sell less. And when you see that there's, it does well, honestly, the capitalist in me was like, oh, maybe we could sign another band. So basically I'm thinking like, oh, who can we hoodwink?
So you immediately did.
Now, granted, I'll hopefully hold on to my conscience. And if
we're
I'm going to
cut dirty fuckers.
All dirty fuckers. Yeah. I mean, you just cannot get American capitalism off your hands. But but you see why, you know, some of those guys, the smarter guys in the industry started their own labels and pivoted to being label people more right. than band because it is an enterprise. So at any rate, I hope that leads to us putting out more music and you know, just sustaining our lives with songs, you know, like it's
sure.
hopefully we don't have to tour quite as much as we were because we have, you know, more of a vested interest in the whole thing.
Can I make a suggestion as an old friend?
Yeah.
Like, you know, one of the things I've seen just as a fan of music over the years and the albums that come to mind for me, because they were very important to me, were Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 mm-hmm. and Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
Agree on both.
Double albums that were very good, but would be like classic all-time top of the list records if they were one album, right? If you just took
yes.
the best songs from both and put them on one.
Yes.
Now, with that logic in mind, wouldn't Pencils Down Friday be more efficient to literally just take like the 12 best songs, regardless of what they're like, and put them out as house or something like that? You know, you still well, got your name recognition.
Right.
You're each pushing each other, you
right.
know, in directions you may, you know, maybe the old loved ones guy in you is like, I can't do anything that pretty. Tim's too, he's too beautiful, you know, but maybe it's time for you to be beautiful. And put the most attractive song on an album. You gotta double down on the house. The idea of Tim taking these beautiful songs and being like, my name is Jelly Roll Curtis, and then all of a sudden putting out his own. That it just seems like, take it from me, Tim. You don't want to start new things with new names when you don't have to. You know what I mean? If you don't have to, don't do it, guy. You know?
Well, we've discussed this, and what better place than to discuss it with you? I mean, I'm a sort of crazy enough and reckless enough to totally rebrand. You know, right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, sure.
And that's essentially what calling it Haas would be, you know, and saying like, and that's where we started with Kick. Like the cover art for the last record just said Haas on it. And,
right. Yeah.
You know, because we did co-write that album. But Tim, as well as the people that I work with, various booking agents and manager and those things of that nature, have said, hey, maybe things are going well. You're still on an upward climb, and but you're not famous. So you might want to just keep going with what's working. And Tim has said this too. And I'm sort of speaking for you, even though you're here, but trust me, I have said like, let's just make it like the Avett brothers.
Right.
You know, which they're doing pretty well, you know, but again, like this gets into more commercial decision-making. And I think it's harder as brothers to navigate that fairly because like, how do you do that? Like, do we rebrand? I don't know. Like for now, the thing with Pencils Down Friday is it's not really, we're not even going, what are the best songs yet? We're just making songs. And that is such the joyful part. And right, I think all that decision-making and like, jockeying of songs, oh, this will be the first one and this will be the single, that's all going to be later. So I think we just want to see how long we can keep this kind of thing going and amass like a fairly big catalog and then make more determinations. We'll see.
Right. Tim, how do you feel about my pitch?
I mean, it's a complicated thing. I think there's a lot. If you consider that Dave has had sort of an entire career before I got onto the scene. But then it's funny though, because at the same time we talked about this actually a couple of days ago, I've now been with Dave for the largest part of his musical journey, right?
Right.
Isn't that right at this point?
Oh,
It's been since 2014. So that's a pretty significant stretch of time. So, but there is, I don't know. I mean, Dave was doing his thing. He was, with the Loved Ones and touring with Gassy as a solo guy and you know, you guys and all these other acts and whatever. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to say because there's a whole background before me and then I'm obviously here. And then with each record, my involvement gets more and more. And so this past one, it's like we wrote everything and we just, you know, it's just, okay, you and I write the songs and then we put them out.
Sure, but sure.
Like how to categorize it and like compartmentalize and all that. I don't really know. I guess we're still just navigating through it. And
so for now, Pencils Down Friday remains pure.
Yes.
Just get songs out, get them worked on and get good songs and see where it goes.
Right. Yeah. A year from now, we'll be doing separate podcast interviews as estranged brothers like the Oasis fellas. because we'll have put all of the only good songs on Dave's record.
Right.
And then Tim will get all the screwball songs and he'll be fierce. No, I mean, ideally, my thought on it is Tim would make a few albums that are Tim focused and meaning like more of his voice musically and lyrically would be showcased there.
Right. Right.
And sort of catch up. And I just mean like catch up in that he'd have fans that dial into just what he does.
Sure.
Develop himself. And then later down the road, wherever that makes the most sense, then we tour. I mean, we already tour as a duo or, you know, and Tim obviously is the right hand man when the band's there, but then there's sort of like two catalogs that can merge, I guess. Mm. I don't know. It's a weird thing. It used to bug me, but now I sort of look at it as like, it's unique. It's this unique story. And
sure.
as long as things are fair, you know, it's like the we split the publishing and all that other jazz. So it's like there's not really too much more to work out on that side. It's just how we want to creatively move forward and which songs are, you know. But, you know, Tim wrote, I still think The Ditch is probably the best song on the last record or one of them. And that was his core. Like, that was an idea that I had no initial spark for.
Right, right.
And so that was really weird. It was like, man, I didn't come up with this chord. Like, this was a chorus Tim brought.
Does that like make you feel some sort of way when it happens? Like, is that something hard for you to reconcile under something that's like your name?
A bit, yeah. And again, I'm rooting for my brother, you know, like as a human. And then I'm also going like, man, this is a good song. And then I helped finish it or whatever. And we sort of loved that thing to life. And then it was just, hey, this is a great song. Can we use it? And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Right.
You know, and basically the decision was, do you want to keep this for your own proposed solo record that you're not necessarily interested in making yet? And this was back in 2018. Or do you want to just put it out and have it make us both money and give us, you know? And so that was sort of how that decision got made. But we just go sort of one at a time, right, Tim? Like, it's like...
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that was a case where pretty soon, like, I remember playing that for Eric. He came over to my house at one point and I played that for him then. And Dave was, I think, in California, and Eric was like, see, now that sounds like a Dave song to me. And that was interesting to me because I was like, well, it's not. At least the chorus part was.
Right.
But it also, it made sense when he said it because also just the way, you know, the place in the register vocally where it's sung, I think it works better with Dave's voice. So that's an instance of like, it's something that, I came up with, but it works in the vein of what Dave does best and what his strengths are. So it's like,
sure,
you know, why I don't want to be too precious and like, oh, this has got to be mine. I'm not going to front. There was definitely that at a point.
And
there was that moment of like, oh shit, well, I think that this is the best thing I've got so far. I only have 10 ideas or whatever, and that's the one. So at first, there was some reluctance, but I just think along the whole way, we've tried to make sure that our relationship as brothers and as friends is the most important thing.
Sure.
And so clear communication and just being completely honest and real about what is going on in your heart when, you know, you come up to these obstacles, I guess you'd call them, or just like, you know, and just try to move forward with clear communication and honesty.
Sure. It's super complicated. What I'm proposing is not easy.
It's the best though. I mean, you're proposing my ideal situation. That's where I'd like to land.
Right.
It's just more of the logistics of putting a tour on sale or a record on sale that's called Haas, there's confusion in the marketplace. I think that's the main barrier of entry. And I'm sort of reckless and crazy enough to just be like,
I don't know if it's crazy though, because, you know, the other idea that you have is like, let's split up our stuff, which effectively would leave songs that maybe aren't as strong on each of your albums. Right. And then also potentially like, you know, you're like, oh, Tim, you do a few records and you could be like 55 years old by the time Tim does a few records, not to be it takes a while to put out a record, you know? So if he really gets into it and he's putting out records and he's touring and doing the thing on his own, then this mythical Haas,
Enterprise,
you know, enterprise, and kind of the thing that, like, you know, you guys are in a unique position to do something like two brothers in a band together who don't hate it. You could be like the Gallaghers who worked it out, you know?
I mean, there's a couple of things really working for us though. I mean, just on this topic, and I think that's mostly the distance. The distance in age is clutch because I think when brothers are closer in age, there's competition and, you might like the same, you might have the same love interest, or you might, you know, you're vying for the attention of the parents. Whereas by the time Tim came along, I didn't want anything to do with my parents. And the fact he arrived, and suddenly I was like,
Well, let's go back to that though. I arrived, and where were you, Dave? Where were you?
Oh, I was very stoned at Lollapalooza, watching the sun. The sun was setting, and Alice in Chains was starting their set with an angry chair.
Oh, Lollapalooza 93. I was there.
We may have been at the same one. That was the one at. Would you go to the Jersey one or Philly?
I went to Jersey, which was at Waterloo Village up in like North Jersey.
Okay, we were at JFK Park or some big grass field or whatever.
It's so funny you say this, Dave, because I even have a question in my notes. And I was expecting some kind of like beautiful story. I was like, you know, large age difference. Dave, what was the day? What was the day like Tim was born and the family brought him home? That's an actual question I've written down. So
my sisters were all there. Yeah, I was at Lollapalooza. I was like, yo, this bill is so sick. It's Rage Against the Machine and Tool,
Tool
and Arrested Primus. Development, Primus.
Yeah,
who I still love. And and boy, was it a good gig. But I had it worked out. Of course, this is how demented I am about music. That when I got home and I was overjoyed, of course, but my mom was like, oh, well, he arrived at 7, whatever the hell. And I actually was like, oh, that's right when Alice in Chains went on and played Angry Chair. Like, I still know that. And that's how much of a dork I am about music. But the distance, I think, is clutch because there's no, I mean, what are we ever in competition for? You know, right. Like, it's just, it's
rooting for Tim.
Always. And it's just so excited to get a brother finally after 3 sisters, you know, like, and not to say that I don't love them, but as a kid, that's like something you're like, well, why can't we get a brother? So,
right. And I was
right
on
time.
Yeah. And I was on the Rare tour where you brought a sister too.
That's right.
Old
yes.
Chippewa.
Well, if we do the Haas thing, then she has to come out on keys.
Yeah. You need at least one sister there. Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. We have 3 sisters.
Got to bring Missy back for that. Yeah.
She's busy though. She's got two little ones.
So do you. You'll leave for tour. You'll be fine. All right. So this is the perfect part then for this game that I've created for this special episode. Wait, is Tim in this thing right now?
I don't see him.
I thought he was the host and now he's gone.
Wait, what?
All right. Now he's back. What's going on with you, Tim?
His audio is still connected.
Just sitting there. Looks like a lost soldier wearing that shirt. What's happening? Is he a POW?
Holy mackerel. Okay.
Oh, we're back.
Are you commenting on my look? Because I only wore this shirt
I was surprised at your military appropriation. That's all. I didn't take you for the hunter pro-military type.
He's on his way to Washington for tomorrow's big inauguration.
Exactly.
Is that what it is? Getting ready?
This is laundry day. Laundry day.
my wife bought someone gave us like a hand-me-down camo jacket, and she didn't know like my thoughts about it yet. And I like just threw it. I was like, no camo. I'm like, I'm not putting my kid in fucking camo. Like, not a chance.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe I should adopt this policy. But everything to me that goes on the kid's body looks cute. You know, so I've gone with a few camo.
I got a couple rules. One is that because like the only useful reasons to wear camo are to hide from people or animals to try to kill them. You know, one of the two. So there's not many other uses that I appreciate. The other rule I have is I won't have like a little baby in like a Ramon shirt until they tell me they like the fucking Ramones. Like, so that's like one of my rules with my kids is like, I'm into that, but I'm not like having like a 1-year-old in a fucking Motorhead shirt. Okay.
I have that. We just got a hand-me-down Motorhead shirt. And listen, I agree with your policy. In other words, this is one of the many policies I put into place that has already been tossed out as it happens as a parent. I was with you. I was like, I'm not putting Van Halen.
Yeah.
Then I'm dad and I'm infringing upon, you know, exactly. They like fucking Thomas. That's right. What they like. They yeah, don't yeah, like yeah. the Ramones.
Get him a Paw Patrol shirt. Be honest.
Right. Yeah. However, right. Look, my excuse is there's two of them. And so whatever
take
thing I can get on over their head quickly and out the door is what I'll go with. If it's Motorhead, so be it. It looks peculiar. My sweet boy, my sweet little Smithy in a Motorhead shirt.
Yeah. They're like, cool. That dude collected Nazi memorabilia and sat at the Roxy drunk his whole life. Wear the shirt.
Exactly. This was exactly what went through my head. I go, this guy sniffs speed.
Yeah. Yeah,
all the time. In fact, my Motorhead story was I was working for Sick of It All. Motorhead was headlining, and they got on a festival, and so we were all waiting to see Motorhead, and they hadn't arrived because he had a heart attack that day.
I don't know why, a minor heart attack that morning.
So everything was moved back. So I'm like in the dressing room, you know, the catering or whatever, and I'm like, when's Motorhead getting here? Fuck, what's going to be? And the tour manager comes in. He's like, we're here. Time to unload, whatever it was. And he says to the production person, he goes, and what did I tell you about that backstage? There's candy. Get the candy and the bread and all that bullshit out of there. I told you a case of Jack Daniels, not a bottle, a case of Jack Daniels. And if the other thing doesn't show up soon and you know what I'm talking about, there's no fucking show. And I was just standing there and I was like, it's all true.
Oh my God. Those tour managers do exist.
Yeah. I was like, he's getting them. He's obviously waiting for speed. Yeah. And he wants a case of Jack Daniels and no candy. All like no food.
No food just would slow it all down.
It was such a crazy moment. But again, when I'm fitting this shirt over my son, who's so sweet and innocent,
right.
And I'm like,
I run into this problem all the time. My son was running around the house today singing Children of the Damned. I'm like, oh, Jesus. Wait, let me throw in my quick Motorhead story. I have one, too, that's similar to that. So Gaslight shows up to the Oakwood Apartments to stay to record 59 Sound. And these are like these, you know, monthly rental type of places that it's just filled with, like, child actors and people there to record records. It's like, it's in Burbank. It's like made for that, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, like, we're feeling pretty fucking cool getting checked into a place like this. I'm feeling good. And there's this really like sharp, witty tongued, like British guy who's checking us in. And he says something about Motorhead being there. And we're like, oh, cool, you know? And then he's given us some basic ground rules. I'm like, don't worry. You know, we'll be good enough. We won't get kicked out. And he basically gave me one of these. He's like, son, he's like, Motorhead has that hall over there. There's nothing you could do that's going to get you. Like, basically, he's like, your little vanilla ass. I've seen 1,000 fucking times walk through the Oakwoods. Don't worry. Like,
right.
You couldn't even imagine the Valhalla of decadence that's happening one hall away from you.
It's true. It's true.
Like, we were in one apartment, like, smoking some grass and chuckling at like the Mighty Boosh. You know, we were like, you know, certainly not.
Oh,
not
dude, that initial stay of an East Coaster in Los Angeles is always, it's always the same.
Right.
Like right before I made my second record, I moved in with Skiba. And Skiba at that point had been in LA for years and years. And he had a nice little West Hollywood place. And so he was giving me the rundown. And you know, at this point, I'm like 32 years old or something. Like, I'm not naive.
And he's like hanging out at like Anton LaVey's house and shit at that point.
I knew he had done all that, but he was just giving me the like, all right, well,
really?
The good tacos are here and the vegan place is there. Like, he was giving me the list.
Right.
And in there, he goes, and you know, you'll see some celebrities around. Incidentally, the guy from Three Doors Down lives three doors down. And I was like, really? And he was like, no, stupid. It's a joke. But I was still so susceptible to anything like that with Los Angeles. Yeah. Like you assume that, I mean, this is where stars live. So it just seemed perfectly plausible. But
yeah.
But I know that feeling when you get out there and you're like, oh man. And another good story was we had this roadie kid from Philly with us and the loved ones, and we rolled into Los Angeles, and he goes like, yo, so are we going to like see stars? And I was like, dude, it's not really like that. We might see Carrot Top or somebody, you know,
and he's in Vegas anyway. Yeah.
And we were walking into a guitar center to buy strings or something. So I'm like, just cool it. Be cool. We might see somebody cruddy.
Right.
And we walk into Guitar Center and the Edge is like 20 feet in front of us. And I went, or you might see the Edge. It was mind blowing. I guess he was doing like some kind of guitar, like a new pedal or something was being brought out or whatever. And so he was like, there was a crowd of people around, but it was such a trip. It was like, it's such La La Land until you live here. And then you're like, oh, it is true.
Yeah. Like, oh, I just saw McLovin at the, you know, Steak and Shake. Like, right. There's always someone somewhere in that yes. town.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fuck LA anyway. West Coast Dave.
I don't live there. I live 100 miles north.
But listen, West Coast Dave smiles a lot more. So I support it. I still support West Coast Dave.
But, I appreciate it.
All right. So let's get into the meat of the interview here. The main thing I really wanted to do, which is our new game show called Who's the Better Brother?
Oh, boy. I can end it right here. We all know who the better brother is. Come on.
Okay. So I've given you both a list of 5 questions that you've answered to me. So I know your answers. You both don't know each other's answers to these 5 simple questions that any brother should know about each other. Okay.
That's what you call leading the witness.
Yeah. So we're going to go topic for I feel like I'm going to go one for one here, and we'll hit both of you instead of like a rapid fire. Does that work for you guys?
Sure.
Okay. Brad, you on board? Yeah. Brad, we're doing a podcast. You can't thumbs up, asshole. all right. So question number 1 to you, David.
Mm-hmm.
You're on a late night van ride. You stop for a convenience store snack. What is your brother Tim getting?
I'm hoping that he answered this question correctly, which is don't put the exact thing that you would get, but answer so that we can get a good story. When we were in Austria, Tim didn't eat. We played one of those festivals where there's no catering.
Right.
And Tim... We get in the van afterwards. Tim's like, oh, I haven't eaten all day. Oh, we got to stop. There's nothing open. We finally get to a gas station. And this kid eats a jar of peanuts the size of like, I don't even know what. A huge thing of peanuts.
Huge.
We get back to the hotel. He's like, I feel funny. And he turns and looks. Is there something wrong with my lips? And his lips have blown up.
No!
Like Donald Duck, you know, like huge. And I was like, yeah, what the fuck happened to your lips? And of course, we're in the middle of Austria. It's like, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night or something.
And they don't even have real medicine if you needed it. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I'm like, holy shit, are you going into, you know, whatever? Would that be anaphylactic shock? And it subsided, but I would think he might answer this question with peanuts.
Even with his lips swelling like that.
Well, because now we have this ongoing thing where he'll come out of a gas station in subsequent years with a can of peanuts. I'm like, no. You're eating too many peanuts. Like, I don't. So,
okay.
That's more what I'm worried about when we're doing the snacking. Is Tim doing peanuts? It's either that or it's the coconut pop, the Mexican coconut pop that you can only kind of get out west. He loves those. He'll eat the shit out of those. It's one of those two.
All right. So that's Dave's answer. We're going to go for Tim's here. Tim, you're a late night van ride tour stop. What is your brother David getting?
He is absolutely getting butter kex. Kex in Germany. And if we're not in Germany, he would do whatever it took to get butter kex, even if we weren't in Germany. No, I don't know. I feel like I could give the U.S. answer, but I just want to
give
stick
the U.S.
with
answer.
The U.S. answer too?
Yes.
It's got to be pretzels, tried and true.
Okay, so with the U.S. caveat, Tim is the better brother. Okay. So Tim said that his favorite would be Tim. Well, all right. So you confused me. I thought the German butter keks were yours, your favorite.
They are, but is a shared favorite. This is a thing that we have been known on the bus to.
What is that? That's like the shortbread or like the little waffle guys?
They're like the little tiny crackers that are sweet, but not too sweet.
Right. But
they're
not
perfectly
too sweet.
Yeah. They're perfectly sweet. We've been known to house, no pun intended, sleeve after sleeve of these things.
Oh, yeah. You'll hear, anybody got keks? You know, and then there's a run either back into the bus or the van or whatever we're in. And the keks rustle around and we share them. You're right. But I didn't think about Germany. I was thinking about America.
Damn. Yeah. You know what? That might be my fault as a touring. It's very, very different snacks
for both
places. So that might be mine. But we'll loosely say this is Tim's category because he did guess pretzels, and pretzels was your answer. So he nailed that. All right. Moving on. David.
Go ahead.
What would your brother Tim answer as his favorite movie?
You know.
And I'll give you a hint for this one because I think Tim's answer is a little unfair.
It is.
So I'm going to give you a hint that it's a film that came out in the last 2 years.
Oh.
Which I don't even know how you could call it your favorite movie. But
you
this
absolutely
was his answer.
Know this.
Oh, Soul.
Oh, nailed it. Okay. Okay.
And honestly, Ben, have you seen it?
I have about 6 times, yeah.
It might be the best movie.
It might be the best movie I've ever seen, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
It's pretty awesome.
Holy mackerel.
I didn't cry for 40 minutes in front of my kids going, the reason I'm crying is because Joe really learned something, and then, you know, and the seed fell down, and he really figured it out. You know, yeah, that was me.
God.
That was me watching.
My God! You know, what's funny about that is, I've been taking a very small SSRI, you know, to help just level off my mood. So,
yeah.
Of course, the fears that come along with taking something like that are, is it going to stunt my moods? And who knew my moods were swinging way high and way low, and that was the problem. It was doing its job. Right. But my fear was like, oh, I'm probably never going to cry at a movie again. And so I wait in these movies. The last couple movies I've seen, I'm like, it's too strong a dose. I'm not going to cry. And when the scene comes in Soul, I was like, okay, I'm good. I'm just pouring tears. Wow. That's such a beautiful film.
So that was your personal litmus test that your SSRI wasn't killing your emotions.
Exactly. Wow. That's right.
All right. Good for Soul. Okay. All right, Tim. What would your brother David say is his all-time favorite movie?
There Will Be Blood.
Nailed it. Nailed it. Drainage,
nice.
Eli.
Nice.
Drainage.
Yeah, that was a big favorite on the Gaslight Loved Ones tour.
Yeah.
I guess that movie had just come out, or?
Probably.
Yeah, and Benny and I in particular kept just saying, like, I'll drink your milkshake.
I'll drink your milkshake. You know, and that's a movie that I rewatched recently. Like, my wife had never seen it, and I was like, we gotta watch There Will Be Blood just so you can see it. And man, what a classic, like, Tony Soprano, Walter White kind of character Daniel Plainview is. I mean, what an absolute piece of shit. But, you know, they just give you those like 2 or 3 points in the movie where you see just enough humanity that you're like, this is actually a person that could come back. It's really so genius. Yeah,
oh, it is. It's incredible.
It's awesome. The other one, that unseated Raging Bull for me, another very complicated asshole, you know, lead character.
Do you find yourself like, I find myself always when I think about a lot of my favorite movies, a lot of them really do settle around like a very troubled male character who goes through like an arc, you know. I guess like the ones that usually leave him in a better place towards the end.
Redemptive. Yeah,
you know?
right.
Like more than
like Shawshank Redemption. Yeah, right.
Yeah, Shawshank or like a Goodwill Hunting or like something like that.
But yes.
Yeah.
Well, this is the weird thing about saying your favorite movie. I think it's the best movie I've ever seen. or Raging Bull is sort of like that, but it's not the movie I watch over and over, you know, like I'm much more apt to watch one of the ones you just described.
Right.
And so it's a bit of a funny thing, but yeah, I would still say it's my favorite. It's like the movie I think of as like the ultimate mountaintop for movies.
It's funny because it always leads to the question, same in music, right? Which is, you know, sure, like Dark Side of the Moon may be a better record than, you know, let's say a Steely Dan album that came out a couple years after. But, you know, 8 times out of 10, the Dan is a little easier to listen to, you know?
I don't want to do give your it a dirty spin. Work. Just comes on and you're happy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, there is something about that. I mean, I think that's where the legacy of Tom Petty sort of proves itself over and over. You're like,
yeah,
because people go like, Bruce Springsteen. You're like, yeah, but I don't. Yes, I'm all in. I'm all on. But I'm always putting Tom Petty on. Like, he's the one I'm going. Or fill in the blank of that kind of comparative. Like, only dudes do this big comparison, though. You know, like...
yeah,
dudes,
these lists.
Who's, like, sat in Vans and considered all this crap. Like I'll go, like, well, what's the better thing? And my wife's always like, better?
Yeah, well, like, why? Why even do that?
I know. I even like both. Like, all right.
We're all in a consistent metaphorical dick size competition. It's just numbers. We're obsessed with the centimeters here, you know?
Exactly.
It's a game of inches, Dave. All right. So we're going to question number three in Who's the Better Brother? Now, this is a fun one because it takes definitely either an intimate knowledge by laundry or shopping together. David, what is Tim's jean size?
29/29, I believe. It could be 29/30. Did you want waist and inseam?
He only gave me one, but you're doing good. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So 29/29?
Yep.
All right. Tim, your answer for David?
My answer, this is a pre-COVID answer. No, I'm just kidding. I felt that, you know, it would be only fair and kind to give the pre-COVID because, you know, I don't think he's packed any on, but
harsh.
We haven't seen each other, you know, any of each other only, but for FaceTime. So I can't.
Yeah.
There's only
Remember,
so much
you get
you can
the
glean.
Juice in the morning and Dave's eating like leftover cold, whatever the fuck his kids didn't eat, you know?
Gauging I'm also from 42. FaceTime.
Yeah, well, we don't get the juice anymore, Tim.
Judging from FaceTime, I think he's, you know, he's looking great, but I can't be sure. No, I'm going to go with a 32.
32.
Yeah.
All right. I got to say, David, you were closer.
Damn. God.
Tim is a 28 and Dave is a 30. So, Dave, you are one size closer than Tim. If we're going,
damn it! But
if we're going,
if
we're going the Price is Right method,
and even that's an acceptable answer because 29 I could make work.
29 is actually a little wide around the waist for you, Tim.
Can you imagine?
It just
no,
more,
I can't. That's
one
what I'm
more
asking.
Latch on the belt has to be. You know, it's one more hole in the belt.
You piece of shit! You absolute piece of shit! You know, the last time I was a 29, I was probably like 13. The last time. I don't know if I ever was. I think I skipped it. I think I went straight from elastic to 30, to 30 plus. I don't know if I ever made it to jeans. That's
elastic. I'm in elastic now.
Yeah.
So,
well, we didn't know we were going to wind up on Zoom. That's Brad's fault. All right. So question number four in our new game, who is the better brother? Tim. What is the song that can make your brother David cry?
This one I had a very, very hard time with. But my final answer was The Joke by Brandi Carlile.
The Joke by Brandi Carlile.
But I don't think that's what he answered. I'll leave it at that. I don't think that's what he answered, but I think if he really thought about it.
He really pondered.
It, he would cry.
Okay, all right. Before we get into that one, I want to see David. What is the song for Tim that can always make Tim cry? This one surprised me. I got to be honest.
It surprises me every time.
I don't know. I had an answer for this. when I sent you my answers, I thought, I gotta think about what would make Tim cry. I don't know. Is it, I'm not sure. Honestly, like I had an answer and it's escaping me. I'm going to go with Gone by the Bouncing Souls.
Ooh, it's a beautiful song. That is incorrect, but a beautiful song. Okay, so.
I think you're going to, when you hear the answer, I think you're going to be bummed that you didn't get it.
Oh.
Of course.
So Tim's answer was Not Ready to Make Nice by formerly the Dixie Chicks. What are they called now? The Chicks?
The Chicks.
Mm-hmm.
So they're baby chickens now.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I got to say, you said it at first, and I was like, okay, Dixie Chicks. But then I'm like, you know what? I've heard that song before and been like a little like choked. Like, I get it. You know, I get it. Yeah. That's a powerful message in that song. And it kind of hit me, too. So I could see it. I could see it. Now, I don't know much about Brandi Carlile. Dave had guessed the song Evangeline. Or Tim guessed the song Evangeline.
I think it's actually called The Mother.
Okay.
I don't think it's called Evangeline, but it's like two songs away from the joke. So I'm probably still crying from hearing the joke. And that's just the song that comes on, you know?
So what's the, I don't know much about that artist. Can you tell me why that kind of tugs at your heartstrings?
Well, that particular song is about her becoming a mom. And we can go listen to it, Ben. Your head will explode. And she just lists all the things that she sort of has had to give up, and you know, the payoff of the lyric is that, but I'm the mother of Evangeline, you know, like, I don't have time to sit in cafes and argue with skeptics and drink wine. And you stole all my, you know, you wrecked my car. So there's humor, but there's also that payoff of like, but I'm your mother. Like I have this child, and it's always just like, ooh. But you know, I did wish I could get this answer back, because right before we signed on, I saw somebody, I never even heard of this artist, but she's number one on Billboard, and she had this like heartfelt thing, like, I'm number one on Billboard, oh my god.
Okay.
And I kind of got a little I got that tinge, and it occurred to me that when I watch award shows and people win, whatever song they're singing, I get choked up, because I'm like, look, they did it, they made their dream come true, even if it's a song I fucking hate. You know, I'm like, oh, and they're giving the speech and then they're launching into the song. I'm always like, you know, even though I'm the most, you know, in my cold punk rock heart, I'm like, the fuck these award shows. But if I'm watching, I'm like all in. I get so wrapped up in their big win, you know.
I'm the same way. I think it's something about what punk rock does to you is you realize they're essentially like, if you play the long game, there are no happy endings, right? You know, so the idea that, you know, a movie that ends like that, or like a little moment in someone's life where you're seeing the culmination of work and actual joy, like, you know, these things aren't sustainable. So when you see it, you have a very visceral reaction to it. I do too. I think it's a very natural thing. And I think it's almost sometimes the way like the skeptic can feel.
Yeah.
You know, like
that's true.
You need those avenues for it. Like I could watch someone I love dearly pass away and I might not cry, but then I'll cry during Soul for fucking 45 minutes, right. You know, just because I need that outlet to do it. So it's powerful. All right. Yeah. All right. Let's finish this game. Who's the better brother?
Are now, we tied, or is Tim back in the lead?
Huh? Right now, I'm not even going to tell you, but it's close. All right? It could come down to this last question. Okay. Now, the last question, and I know it's something important to both of you. I know, as a caveat, there's been a lot of fucking Philly people on recently. I'm getting a little sick of it. So...
You know what I'm gonna say about that?
Yeah, you heard me.
You know what I'm gonna say about that is you've got two real Philly motherfuckers. Not any of these, I lived in the Poconos,
that's true.
For college, or I'm from, you know, Illinois, and I heard about the war on drugs, I live in Philly because it's a cheap place for me to make my crappy band. We're real fucking Philly guys.
Real Philly.
And so I'm gonna just say, all respect to all those other people who are doing that. That's great. I'm glad it's a magnet for the arts now. But I was there when it sucked. And there were no bands coming out of Philly. There were none.
That's true. It's true. Right? It was only Crud as a Cult. That was it.
Or Ink and Dagger.
Stalag 13. That's all you guys said. But I got to say, this gave me a great idea because a couple episodes ago, we had Dominic from the band Nothing. Mm-hmm. And he's a straight like Kensington guy.
Yeah, he's real Philly.
So now, in the spirit of game shows on going off track, I almost want to like, I think we might have to do a Who's More Philly segment.
He wins. I'll beat the Menzingers. I'll beat those Menzingers at Who's More Philly.
Oh, yeah.
But he wins.
They're Scranton as fuck. And you know,
I love that they're Philly, though. They're great ambassadors for Philadelphia.
And you know, Tim's on Twitter going nuts about the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, That's another look. He's Brad will vomit in his mouth if we talk about the Eagles and the Giants right now. So let's move on to question number 5 of who's the better brother. Now, I want to know, what is your all-time favorite Philadelphia team? Now, when I think about it for myself, I have to say like the 99 Yankees are probably like my all-time favorite team, or maybe like the 91 New York Giants. But it's the one that like, not only were you so happy they won, you were fully immersed. Maybe it was the first time you seen it when you were a kid and you had that a different kind of connection to the team. So, Dave, what would be Tim's favorite all-time Philly sports team? And you know, both gave a couple options to these, so there's a couple I'll accept.
Well, I can tell you who his top two would be. Certainly the Eagles team that won the Super Bowl. I guess that's 17 or is that
17? 17 Eagles. 17,
yeah, because the Super Bowl happens in the beginning of the year. Okay, so the 2016-17 Eagles team is right up there.
Yeah.
But I wonder, because of the child element, if it's the Sixers of... Wow. What was that? 01 with Iverson?
Wow.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Aaron, I got it. Oh, sweet.
McKee.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Tim was so into basketball as a kid and loved Iverson. Still does. Talks about him all the time. We discuss him, you know, whenever we're together for long trips and things. So I'm guessing it's those two. Do I have to pick one of those two?
No, you actually picked both of his options.
Both of them.
Which makes you an exceptional brother.
Exceptional brother.
Now spin this
around. I feel like I got to make one more just for the record.
Okay.
The 04 Eagles that went to the Super Bowl and lost to Tom Brady, they have to be the honorable mention.
Okay.
They have to be the...
Why, just because you had the biggest boner for Donovan McNabb or...
Actually, T.O. T.O.
Oh, really?
It's even more controversial than McNabb. T.O. I love T.O. and I still will...
Tim House.
I'll go onto the mat for T.O.
In a camo shirt, professing his love for Terrell Owens. What a strange day.
Laundry day.
I lost $100 on that team to Trip from the Unseen. The Level Ones were on tour with the Unseen and Strike Anywhere.
Uh-huh.
And celebrated that Super Bowl in Orlando. And Trip, of course, being the most Boston guy ever. It's like, hey, how you doing?
No way, Glenn.
Let's put a couple dollars on this. And I was like, sure, $100. I mean, I didn't have a pot to piss
in. Yeah.
And yeah.
Wow. That's a big hit in those days, $100.
It was nasty. It was No vegetarian hot dogs were consumed that night by me because all my money went to Trip.
I love the Orlando veggie hot dogs. Anyway, you know, he has the hot dog man has a brick and mortar store now.
Oh, no kidding.
The veggie hot dog man. In Orlando, yeah.
Oh, good for him. Brick and mortar now.
That is the American dream. For any context, real quick to anyone, any punk rocker who went to Orlando for about 20 years saw the vegetarian hot dog stand man in downtown Orlando. It was like, you just had to do it. Okay. So now, Tim, what would David's all-time Philadelphia sports team be?
This is tough. I honestly, this is really difficult. Because I won't go there. I was going to say a lot of these teams were before my time, but
I mean, it's fair,
which is fair. Cause cause I know that Dave was really into sports. And then for a long stretch of my life, he's been pretty out on sports. And
but
so
I gotta say, I don't like this cop out though, Tim. You're like Mr. Philadelphia sports.
Yeah.
If you can't, you know, be.
Do you want a small hint?
You know, if you can't be in line, it's like me not knowing who like the late 70s Yankees were, you know? Like, of course I did.
No. I have my guesses and I have my, you know, hunches. I know the teams that would be selected, but I'm going to go. This is a bit of a soul answer. The team that I've seen Dave get most into is the Jimmy Butler, Embiid, Simmons Sixer squad that lost to the Raptors.
So the 18 Sixers that lost on Kawhi's final shot.
Yeah, that's the team that I've seen Dave get the most jazzed for and pumped on.
So we were staying up till like 4 in the morning on the bus in Europe. Listening to it,
sure,
and beating on the bus roof when you know what I mean. Like we were all in on that team.
Yeah,
18 it was.
Yeah, 18. Yeah, maybe 18, 19. Huh. Yeah, or 17, 18. But definitely that year. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean that was the culmination of the process as a Philly fan. That must have felt. That's like the big payoff after 5 years of. Being what? Pretty joke basketball. Yeah.
Yeah.
That must have been a lot of fun. But Tim, I'm afraid you're wrong. And David's answer was the 1993 Philadelphia.
93 Phillies. God damn it.
You know, that was your big.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Well, again, it was that formative time. I was young. I was I guess I was only 15.
Who was on that team? Was that Mike Schmidt still?
No.
Schmidt was gone by then.
Schmidt was in the 80s. Schmidt was on the 80, at least on the 83, probably on the 80 Phillies.
Yeah.
No, this was like a band of misfits. It's the most Philadelphia story ever.
It was like Darren Dalton.
Dalton was catching. Uh-huh. Crockett first base. What the hell was the name of that second baseman? But that was the team with Mitch Williams.
Right. Crazy Mitch.
And to me, it helped underpin the Philadelphia myth that you really can't get to the top. Because they were this storied team. Nobody bet on them. Everybody assumed that they couldn't do it. And it was like a ragtag bunch of people.
Yeah.
And then at the end, Mitch Williams, the wild thing, the closer, threw away a home run.
Right.
To Toronto. And it just sort of, that was sort of my exit from sports for a while as a real fan. Because I was like, there's something up with this city. We're never going to get it.
Right.
And
I think
there was a drought. From then on, even entering a championship for like, I guess it was like 25 years.
Yeah,
or
until the 08 World Series, probably. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, I didn't even realize this was the team that lost in the World Series to Joe Carter's Blue Jays on the
Joe
famous,
Carter. That's right.
Yeah, on the famous home run. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had Darren Dalton, John Crook, Mickey Morandini at second base.
Mickey Morandini, yeah.
Lenny Dykstra in center.
Dykstra.
Oh, my goodness. Kurt Schilling, a young Kurt Schilling. Look at this. What a bunch of assholes on this team. Yikes.
Oh, totally. It was like a bunch of guys they collected from South Philly and put on this, you know what I mean? Like a bunch of jamokes from the bar.
I can't believe, Lenny Dykstra and Kurt Schilling were actually on the same team being assholes with each other. I can't believe that's
totally.
A thing.
And wow. Dykstra, oh my God, I tried reading his book. He put out a book. He was on Howard Stern with it. And I'll read Dykstra's book. All I ever do is read books about musicians. And I liked him as a kid. This was the most horrible book you ever read.
Not a good guy.
Not a good guy. Not a good writer. I mean, it was like, I'm usually pretty, gracious about that kind of thing. But I was like, this sucks. This guy sucks. This book sucks.
I know. It sucks. Like, I was about to say something really mean. But there is a lot of people who I wish I didn't get to know as adults. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. Yeah. All right. Well, that was a great game. Thank you.
Great game.
And I'd like...
I think I won, which is...
So here's what's funny. You guys are such good brothers. It's equal. And this is the reason House will work. Okay? This is the reason it will work. You are naturally on this even playing field. We went through this whole exercise. Okay?
Yep.
Tim wins the food. Dave wins the movie. Dave wins the jeans. Tim wins the song. Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. Tim wins the food. You tied the movies. Dave wins the jeans. Tim wins the song. Dave wins the sports team. That's 2.5 apiece.
Beautiful. All right. Look at that.
So Here, I'll leave something in your hands, okay, gents? So I had an alternate question just in case we ran into this. Do we want to leave it at a tie? Or do we want to decide this?
Let's decide.
All right. Tim, you up for it?
Yeah, I guess.
All right. This is the one I told you I was going to remit, and I'm no longer remitting.
Okay.
All right. I want each of your, and this isn't historical because that is unfair to Tim, your celebrity Hollywood crush currently, if you're allowed to say it. This is the reason I was remitting it.
We can say it, but how are we going to do the game? Like, do we just answer at the same time or do we text you privately?
Yeah, everyone text me your answer.
Okay.
Real fast.
Hold on, Benny. Here we go.
Okay. All right, Tim, hit me. Okay, good. We're in. So, David, who is your brother Tim's celebrity crush?
Shit. I really don't actually... I probably know this if I had more time, but on the spot, I'm going to say...
Gal
Gadot.
Okay. Oh, it's funny how... Okay. Tim? David's celebrity crush?
Dave's... I'm going to give the historical answer because that's the only one that's coming to mind. However, he just tipped his hand with the Gal Gadot answer because No. I know who it is. It's the... Oh, man. Never mind. I was going to say Christie Brinkley, but that is not my answer.
This is the reason I didn't say historical. So you didn't have to answer Christie Brinkley.
I was going to say that. But it's...
She's a very beautiful woman.
I can't remember her name, but she does the... she's the host of the one that she...
Brooke Shields.
Damn it.
I Sophia Loren. He's not that old.
Lauren Bacall.
Ringwald?
I don't have the... I know the woman, but I know the face and I know the woman and I can't come up with her name. So...
Okay. Well, you both lose.
It's that host though, isn't it?
The host?
Isn't she a host of some type of show right now? Like a cooking show or...
That doesn't...
Or like a game show?
Oh... I do quite like her.
Yeah, Padma. That wasn't your pick?
I like Padma too.
Padma Lakshmi. Oh,
I like.
Wow. You know, it's funny. This whole time, my wife introduced me to this show. And she goes, "You're gonna love Padma," and so I started following her on Instagram. And I go, "Look at this Padma to Tasha." I go, "She's incredible looking. She's so beautiful." I said, "How could this be? She's a chef." And Tasha was like, "No, dummy. She was." Oh, model right. First.
Who She's judges chefs.
And who happens to become a big chef
right.
a judge. And so I was like, oh, shit. I've been spending this whole time. Because, you know, model to me is like, whatever. You know, it's not as impressive if you have a crush on a model. You know what I mean? It's just a known commodity at that point. I thought
See,
she
Dave,
was a
again,
chef.
Again, you've so, made my point for the record House. Okay? Because you got to remember, no one cares, man. After like 2 years, no one cares. And all they're going to know you was, they're going to be like, who's Dave? Who's Tim? We don't know these guys. We just know House, you know?
That's the thing. Yeah.
Remember, people are so stupid, Dave. Okay? Remember, you know, that
we're all just not doing that well,
you know? So it's just not that important.
Yes.
All right. So you both lose.
Right.
Dave had guessed Scarlett Johansson.
That's a good guess.
Tim had guessed Anne Hathaway.
I just followed her on Instagram, which means she is a crush.
So
that
pretty
was a good,
good
answer. But no, I didn't that, get. Oh, wait, I didn't guess. My answer was ScarJo.
For Tim. And Tim, your guess was Anne Hathaway.
And you
for
thought
Tim.
I would say
no, okay. No. My answer was Anne Hathaway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we have all right. Well, you still both fucked up, but we
yeah. We either way we slice it, we lost.
Either way, you tied. And it seems like I don't know if the houses want to explore this in a separate conversation, but you realize 3 out of 3 of your answers were women who play superheroes. So what kind of thing you guys got going on here?
That's not an accident.
That is interesting.
A little bit of an escape fantasy, gents? Maybe it's you thin-waisted characters need a strong woman. All right.
Yeah. We need to be rescued.
So this was great. You guys are even brothers, but this was a very fun game we got to play. And thank you for taking the time to answer my questions beforehand. I know you're usually not in the business of answering extra questions before a podcast, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, but for you, it's different. It's different. In other words, if it's a podcast about your favorite album or whatever, but this is like we are friends, so the worst that could happen is we say something off color or bizarre because of our comfort level. You know what I mean? So I think that's the difference when you do an interview or whatever, a conversation like this with a friend, it's like
that's true.
It's already comfortable. But if I got these questions from somebody I didn't know, really?
Yeah. I figured I could get away with a little more with you gents. But definitely. Let's keep the fun train rolling, okay? I got all these serious questions, but since we're on the topic of friends and having a good time here, I want to keep it rolling with our segment called Mystery Friends.
Oh, yes.
Now, Tim, I'm sorry to say this mystery friend is for Dave, okay? I couldn't get a mystery friend for you this fast, and I didn't want the whole episode to be mystery friend. So, Dave, I was asked to hear a story from you about going to get sushi before a show in Toronto, Canada.
I think I know who this is.
So I would like you to tell me the context. So yeah, just for clarity, the person I asked is the most amazing person, has the greatest stories, may not totally understand the concept of mystery friend. Because super obvious that it was him. But I still figured it'd be a great story. Well,
so when I went solo, I suddenly was in a different... So I started to open for all of the same bands that I had played with the Loved Ones. Except for, you know, for instance, when the Loved Ones were opening for the Bouncing Souls, we had no money and no ability to like, in so certain situations would come up where like dinner would come up and it'd be like, we're going to sit this one out. The Souls are going to go to dinner because they're making money at this. And we're going to be in the backstage eating chips. Well, when I went solo, because there's nobody else, I could suddenly attend these dinners and was like feeling like I had a bunch of money. I didn't, but I was like, oh, shit, I'm on tour. Go eat. So I went on a little trip with the Bouncing Souls opening for them right around the first record. And I was on this kick where I was like, let's go get real dinner before the show. Now, Pete Steinkopf, who it's either him or it's Brian, one of those two, hates leaving the venue. He's like, I got to get acclimated to the zone before we... And so he'll sit in the venue for hours. I've got to have a couple drinks, man, and watch all the openers. Like, he just wants to be there.
I'm kind of the same. I get freaked out if I leave too long.
Yeah. You're more of a nester. And I'm more... The way I used to burn nervous energy was like, just do as much as possible, not think about the show, and then just do the show in the moment.
Right.
And I won't get nervous that way because I won't be fixated. So we went... I said, come on, Pete, Brian, let's go. There's a couple of... Maybe McDermott, I don't know. But we went next door to this Japanese restaurant that was like... It was very involved. It was like, arigato! Everyone yells a greeting when you walk in. It's super loud. And I was like, this is great. The food's supposed to be amazing. Like, and Keeneland, he turns to Pete and goes, ah, there's a din. There's a din in here. I can't hear myself think. And he starts complaining. And Pete's like, oh, man, this is not the right thing to do before the show. I'm like, you guys play in 4 fucking hours. Like, can we sit like humans and eat? No, man. No. We got to go. And he's like, it's din. I can't hear. So we leave. And I said, well, what do you guys want to eat? Like, this is the place. My girlfriend at the time, who's now right. my wife, like, found the place.
Yeah. I finally like, got go money.
Yeah. It was like super. Yeah. And Pete's like, this looks like a pretty good place. And it's a fucking sushi place right across from the okay. venue. So you can see the venue. And not a blessed soul is sat in there to eat. No one. No patrons at all. And I'm like, guys. The reason this place has a din, it's because humans are showing up to eat right. there because it's yeah. popular. There's good food. We're in Toronto, which is far from the ocean. So sushi is probably yeah. not going to be yeah. as good a bet as this other place. Why do we go? It's nice and quiet, man. No, you don't yeah. want quiet sushi in
Lake
a landlocked
salmon. It's
place.
Delicious. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And no, it's perfect, man. We'll be in and out. I'm like, no, we want to sit down. So we race in there. Horrible meal. And so the rest of the tour, they're of course like they quickly are. I mean, those two are so good at being able to turn the joke on you. Like, I'm like, you two old fuckers, you know, like, what kind of crazy shit is and sure, they're like, so the next day they're like, let's go. Hey, Brian, you want to find the most busy and expensive and stupid place to eat some sushi?
Yeah. Let's do that. That sounds like a good thing. You know, we're punk rockers, of course, but yeah, let's go be hoity-toity.
And I'm like, guys, that's not what I was trying to do. I was just trying to have a good time. So I believe it's one of those two. And I believe that's what they're referencing. If not, this story was completely without any more.
You were right. It was Pete Steinkopf. Who provided yes. me with this. And that is fucking hilarious. I love that that idea. You can't burn the Bouncing Souls. You can't.
No.
They are shameless.
No, they're a team.
And unified. And you just, I wouldn't even begin to try to do that with them. You get eaten alive.
No, they're a fucking team. Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. It's rough too because I came from a culture of construction and then sick of it all, which is a similar kind right. of burning. Like, it's pretty,
sure,
it's pretty
sure,
rough.
Sure. You know, not for the thin skin.
The souls have no. And so I came into the Bouncing Souls camp and assumed it was a similar thing. East Coast,
they're way
punk
sweeter
rockers,
about it,
etc.
Yeah.
They're way sweeter, which is even better because it stays fun. Like, nobody ends up running right. out and smashing anything. But it sort of bubbles under the surface the whole time. It's like the goof comes up and you're like, right. oh, damn, he got me again. Whereas, like, you know, was sick of it all, especially in the era I was there, like Craig and I would right, spar right. like crazy. And, you know, we would just really go for sure. I mean, we're still friends and everything like that. But the souls have that weird brother thing, like yeah. Pete and Brian especially. It's really...
That's fucking
really
funny.
Crazy.
And then he also gave me a B about drilling a hole in his guitar.
Oh.
That's something you did to his guitar?
Listen, again, I came into the Bouncing Souls with a set of principles and discipline from working for Sick of It All. You know, like, they didn't tolerate
right.
nonsense. And so I came in and was like, you know, I was like, I can't drink before the show, you know. And Pete was like, I'm your boss, man. I'll never forget, we're in New Orleans. I'm your boss, man. You want a hurricane? Have a hurricane. And because I'm your boss, I tell you to drink. And so basically, you know, kicked back off a right. long life of alcoholism.
Right. Thanks, yeah.
But yeah, by the end of that tour, we were sure. loose as a goose. And he has that beautiful white Les Paul that we all know now. That was new back when I was working for him. And as they do, the screw that right. holds the strap on pulled out.
And you didn't have any Grolsch bottles around?
Like, yo. No, the screw pulled out. Like, so the,
yeah,
the you know what I mean?
Screw.
The strap button had pulled full clear of the guitar. because he has it dragging around his shins. You know, it's so low. All the weight is on there. So it pops out and it was loud and I had the backup for him. I handed him the backup and Pete is the sweetest person you can ever work for. Like he'll never bark at you or be like, get me my guitar. So he quietly was like, just fix it and give it back, you know? And I'm like, and I was like, oh shit. Fix like, it and give it back.
Yeah.
Like, this is bad. Like, I would need toothpicks and glue. And I mean, that's kind of how you fill that hole, drill a new hole, or drill a screw into the existing hole, but you have to close it in.
Yeah, and you got to let it sit.
There's like two songs left. Right. So I just thought I was following orders and just grabbed a screwdriver and piloted a new hole into the Les Paul next to that one. But that's the most sturdy way to do it because you're going into the wood. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's a screw right into the wood. The other hole is blown out. That's how the screw fell out. So he turns around to check on me, I guess, during the song. And he sees me back there like, you know, basically, I mean, putting a hole in his fucking guitar. And he said he just was like, oh, my God. And I handed it back to him like, look, it's ready. And so I've never lived that one down. Like, remember when you put a hole in my, and now, of course, he's very sweet about it. He's like, look, man, like, still there, still holding up, you know, even to this day, because it's still like this classic guitar of his. But sure enough, drunkenly and panicked, I did that. I.
Well, I appreciate your fervor for just like, you know, there's a couple types of people in the world. There's some of the people who sit on the side and be like, I don't know what to do, like blah, blah, blah. And just, and then some people who are like, hey, I got to figure this out.
Into this guitar. You know?
It's the holes.
Yeah. By hook or by crook, I'll get this guitar back around your
neck.
That's
the construction way. Cause as you know, you start working for craftsmen, you know, they got a lot of tricks, you know, every single one has these cheats and tricks and things that you're like, oh, that's how you guys do this.
Yep.
So there's always a way.
Yeah.
There's always a way.
There's a way. Yeah. And there's the way when you have time and a focused environment. And then there's the way in the moment to get the, get the damn thing done. And that's unfortunate.
There's lots of different.
But I get my mark on Pete's guitar. When that thing is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, and they do the Bouncing Souls thing, maybe there'll even be a little note like, oh, Dave Haas put this.
You know. I love it. That's fucking awesome.
Right. The show must go on.
Hey, guitar is a guitar. Yep. Still works, right?
That's right. They're tools.
All right. So I literally have pages of very serious songwriting notes about your creativities and where this is coming from. And we got to very little of it. Thank goodness for me, because I like you guys more than I like music in general. So it's perfect for me.
You know, that's actually kind of good because we'll have a record that'll come out, you know, and then we can come on here and talk about that
and
those kind of questions. But this one at least gets to the heart of the matter. It's a natural.
We got to the heart of house. That's what I was trying to do. So, but before we go,
rebranding.
Both of you are doing pretty well, all things considering these days. I've known both of you a minute. And I'm curious if you could recommend to the going off track people a book or a film or a podcast or something like that you guys are hanging on to that are kind of either helping you or guiding you a little in 2021 here.
Well, I'm going to give like maybe a trick answer and just say, what this album a day thing has done for me has been pretty big. And I just would recommend it to anybody. I know it's really open ended way to answer the question. Cause you have to then fill out your album per day, but it seems like a tall task at first. You know, I saw the person that did it. I saw his whole list from the year prior and I was like kind of overwhelmed at first.
A little daunting.
Right. And then, but like, if you just set aside a half hour or an hour or so to think about it, listen to something. It's just a great way. We all get stuck in our little loops of things that we listen to and like, and it's sometimes hard to get out of those ruts.
For sure.
And this has been such an awesome journey to just like keep new music coming into my mind and just, you know, new ideas and you know, broadening the horizons and all that shit.
So. What's record number one that you want people to listen to?
Record number one. Well, I'll go with the record of today because I have a hard time putting any other record over it. And this was recommended by my sister.
All right.
So this is another. She told me to listen to Rumors, Fleetwood Mac,
yes.
Which, as we all know, what an album. And listening to it this morning, it was just fantastic. Loved it. Oh, love it every time, but it's you can't miss with that one.
Yeah.
You got two from Ben. Ben suggested Use Your Illusion 1
I took,
and 2.
I took them down. I took them down.
And then Melancholy yep. and the Infinite
First
Sadness,
4 days covered.
Yeah. Of those.
Yep. Yeah, right. Yeah. It'll take you a while, but those are holy mackerel.
Tim, what if I was just like, hey, I'm doing the Nuggets compilations? Then you're just listening to the same shit for 2 months.
Well, you know, there's veto power in there.
Of course. All right, David, you got anything for the peoples?
Yeah, I would echo the soul sentiment. Watch that movie. I know that some people get hung up with animation that are adults, but don't let that hang you up. This is one of the best movies. As far as, I mean, just thinking about things to hang on to, I listened to that Brené Brown podcast a lot. I think she goes into a lot of good territory of how to survive, especially the moment. She sort of speaks that wellness dialogue, which can be a little bit off-putting for an older person like
Come on.
Me who's easily annoyed.
We're Kyrie Irving Sage fans in this house, you know? We burn.
Yeah, exactly. I love her insights, and I love the guests she has
What's
on.
The name
She's
of that
great.
Pod?
And then the book it's called Unlocking Us. And, you know, she'll do like an episode on burnout and how to get through it, the cycles of burnout that you go through and correlations with different like facets of the pandemic. Like, hey, we're in month 4 and that typically would bring out these kind of emotions. And so it's kind of heady and spiritual. But she approaches it all as a researcher. So she's got stuff to back up her theories and stuff. And it's really done with a lot of love. And that, I think that's helped me quite a bit. And then as far as a book, the book I keep coming back to is The Untethered Soul. And, you know, again, it's pretty heady, but it allows you, it gives you tools or helps you understand that like your immediate worries and your immediate, you know, whatever your concerns are temporary, and that your soul is a different thing from your thoughts and your feelings and your actual body and stuff. So it helps you sort of look at your behaviors and the things that you're sort of fucking up from a distance. Like you can pan out and be like, okay. And it's helped me as a parent and stuff. I've been reading. And if for parents out there, I'd say No Drama Discipline. That's the unfortunate reality is I read it and I was identifying more with the 2-year-olds than the parents.
Yeah.
You know, like there's all this stuff where they're going like, oh, and then the two, what's happening with the 2-year-old is they can't regulate their emotions. And I'm like, understand. I can fucking relate. Yeah.
Well, I think that we mentioned that on the phone the other day, right? It's that funny thing where with age does not necessarily bring wisdom. And the older I've been getting,
right,
and I see certain things, I'm like, oh my God, that 60-year-old person is a 4-year-old not getting their lollipop right now. And this is the same exact reaction. Yes. They never grew up. I'm like, it's remarkable.
Yes. Right. I think what we mistook for growing up, like in what we did as a, like sort of as a generation, I almost think is like we grew up and lost all the fun. Right. And so like, oh, now I'm growing up. I don't have any fun, but you didn't grow up in the way that you need to, which is like regulating yourself and not having tantrums.
Right.
Just have the fun, but get yourself steady, you know? And that's been my goal, since the kids arrived at, you know, I remember you saying things about that when we did those Gaslight shows in Europe, I guess it was, we took a couple long walks and you were talking about steadying, you know, staying steady for your kids. And a lot of that I've come back to a lot of the comments that you've made about parenting because you're a couple years ahead of me on that journey. And it's helpful, you know, like that's been a big goal, is like steadiness. And I think it's hopefully like making its way into the creativity too, that we're steadily trying to do good work and get right. it out there steadily. And, you know, like hopefully that's kind of a new goal, because there's a lot sure. of erratic years, a lot of crazy.
Well, it's almost necessary, energy. Right? Because the things a lot of people do to incite creation are things that are unhealthy for a family. You know, and you do have totally. To find another way. If people are very emotional about the way they write or when they write or need to be emotional to write, then you're now putting everyone mm-hmm. else around you in a very different situation. So you even noted it before in the interview. There's a difference between the solo person you maybe imagined yourself to be and where you're at. But I appreciate your growth, Dave.
Hey, thanks for helping to water that plant.
I've seen you in a couple instances where if I looked down and been like, that's going to be the father of twins in a while, I would have been like, bad move. Bad idea. But you've grown into it, my friend, and you look good wearing this hat. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, man. I remember, just to sum up, I remember a great moment. We were going on we were playing it, maybe the biggest German audience on the tour I did with you guys for Handwritten. And I was scrambled eggs in the backstage. You came in and were like, what's going on? And I had my shit thrown everywhere, bottles of booze open. And I was supposed to be on stage in like 3 minutes. I was texting and you were like, yo, aren't you going on stage? Are you going to be late? And I was like, no. You were like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm finishing up my shit, dude. And I'll go play. Don't worry. And you kind of sat back and you were like, oh, this is how you don't get nervous. Like, you create utter chaos right up to the last minute and then walk on stage and I was like, I guess, sure, you know, but you were like assessing it and wisely, like, and going like, oh, I see what you're doing. And I was like, you know, just freaking out. And it's nice to know that's not necessarily
right.
the approach.
Yeah, yeah. You know? You just explained why I don't have like 80% of my friends anymore. But
yeah. Oh, seriously, man.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Dave, Tim, I love you guys. Thanks for doing
love
this.
You too, man.
And I'll hit you up when it's out. We'll do it again soon when the pencils down sessions are done.
Yep.
Yeah. All right,
see
guys.
You boys.
Thanks for everything. See ya.
Phew. Oh, man. The Brothers House.
It shows what good friends you are with those guys, Benny, but I should tell everybody listening that after the quote-unquote tape stopped rolling, yeah. the conversation went on for like another 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
With these guys talking about sports.
I mean, it's very deep, Brad. Like, I know you're not from around here, so I'll explain it to you. But there's a cultural divide between New York City and Philadelphia. Even though they're so close, there's always been a thing there. And the older I get, you know, I get to the point where I'm like, hey, listen, you know, people in this country that considers America an adversary could give a shit if you're from New York or Philly, you know? Right. You're from the same place to them, right? And we are yeah. basically from the same fucking place. It's like an hour away, you know? But there has always been, and even Dave noted it in the background of this, there's always been like sort of a bit of like an elitism from the people in New York, and a bit of a puffy chest about their sports teams and their city. We're bigger, we're richer, we're this, you know, and New York gets all the songs. And then there's this city like an hour away where actually the country actually started. And I got to be honest. I mean, I've been going to games most of my life, you know, like 35 years, I've been going to sports games, and there is nothing that feels like an Eagles Giants game. I mean, right. it is like real tension, like real hatred. There's like an actual palpable thing that kind of makes me like super uncomfortable. Cause
yeah.
when I'm in that situation, I'm like, yo, whoa, whoa, guys, You know they're playing a fucking game, right? You know, like someone 10 minutes away from here can't eat fucking dinner. Someone just got cancer. Someone just died. These guys are getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to throw a ball around, and you're going to beat each other about that? Like, it makes no fucking sense.
Right.
But when you're in that environment, it's hard. It's like, it's hard to stay cool because people are sitting there shitting on you for like 3 hours, shitting on you, shitting on your city, shitting on your team. And it's hard to like not start to get defensive and like a little chesty. And before you know it, I feel like even the classiest person gets sucked into it. So I think people could take my relationship with the Hosses in a good way for the fact that we're both, you know, very committed to our cities and teams, but also recognizing that it's like not real. And, you know, if you're not at this point in my life, if you're watching sports and you're even like remotely upset, like, what are you doing? You know, you're literally choosing you're choosing an entertainment. You're choosing something to entertain yourself with. And I don't know what other world you would entertain yourself with something that drives you crazy. It's like, hey, I'm going to take 2 hours to drink light beer and punch myself in the balls.
I think you're 100% correct. And the only exception to that rule is, of course, Tom Brady.
You love him, don't you? He's your boy. He's your
boy. I'll always watch him play, but not for any good reason whatsoever.
I mean, at this point, take away everything about Tom Brady. I don't even know what that guy's about. All I want to know what he eats 3 meals a day. Basically, I want to take whatever Tom Brady, whatever LeBron James eat.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure I eat that and sleep in whatever cryogenic chamber they sleep in or whatever they do.
Well, it's babies. They eat babies.
Oh, right. Baby blood. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Embryonic fluid.
Wait, but is Tom Brady part of the global elite? I thought he was a Red Hatter.
Yeah, he is.
I'm not sure if he eats babies or not.
But that's the thing about the Red Hatters is they point everything that they're guilty of is what they're pointing the fingers at the elites for.
Mm.
Did you notice that that's been Trump's MO from the beginning?
That's true.
So you know that whatever they're accusing the left of is what they're actually doing. Thus,
right.
Tom Brady is eating babies.
Right. So basically, Democrats eat babies in pizza places in D.C., but conservatives eat babies in those weird like Masonic meetings like out in Colorado or something. Yeah. They just do it more DL. Well, there's one thing that's for sure, Brad. Baby eating is rampant. It's everywhere. It needs to be stopped. It's the great problem in America. But listen, the resolutions, 10-year show this Saturday, 23rd. And if you need info for it, Dave House is on Twitter at House Dave. He's on Instagram at Dave House. And Tim is also on Twitter at Tim Capital Bill House and on Instagram as Tim Bill House. So follow those guys and make sure
go
you
to the
go,
show.
Go to the show event Saturday. This Saturday. It's going to be fun.
Yeah,
Resolutions is a cool record. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
And we dropped our Patreon links already. We don't have to do that. But if you want to throw us a little tip, you can go to Venmo.com/offtrack and give us a couple bucks or $1 million.
Right. No
Wait,
problem.
What did we say? If we got, we'll promise to do this podcast for another 5 years if we get $1 million on Venmo.
We got it.
Is that what we said?
I think we got to pony up a little more than that.
More than 5 years of podcast?
If someone sends us $1 million, I was about to say a year of podcast naked. But now I'm backtracking. Maybe a month. Maybe a month of podcast naked. That's a big commitment.
Wait, I don't even understand what that means.
It means literally recording without any clothes on. What
But the way we do understand? This, nobody's gonna see you anyway.
Yeah. So
I'm doing it. I'm naked right now.
You are?
No.
Oh, and not. Thank you also for whatever friends out there have been leaving sexually explicit commentary on our iTunes. I love a good rating. I love a good review.
A good Randy rating.
But yeah, I really prefer a review that's just like sexually explicit in nature somehow, you know? Throw something in. You know, tie us up. Put us in handcuffs. Anything. Anything to make it saucy. All right, Brad, let's get out of here. I'm gonna go feed my kids.
Okay, me too.
I'll see everybody next week, and thanks for tuning into the program.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.